She is the director of operations at Random Acts, a nonprofit dedicated to spreading kindness around the globe. She's also a professor of communication studies and the department chair of communication and media studies at the University of Wisconsin River Falls. Here's her talk, Kindness as a Revolutionary Act.
Thank you. Thank you. So, kindness as a revolutionary act. What do you think of when you think of kindness? Maybe you think of something like that, right? The quote. Maybe you think of something like this, buying somebody a cup of coffee, right? Or maybe you think of something like that. Glitter unicorns? Yeah, there we go, right? Is this kindness as a revolutionary act? Does this fit? Maybe. So let's first start by looking at the word kind. Okay, what do we mean when we say kind? So kind is of a good or benevolent nature or disposition, as in a person, a kind and loving person. Okay? Then we've got another definition, having, showing, or proceeding from benevolence, kind words. You got benevolence in there twice, so that's obviously an important word. Third one, indulgent, considerate, or helpful, humane, often followed by to, as in to be kind to animals. I like the helpful part. The indulgent part makes me think of giving in to a three-year-old in the candy aisle of a grocery store, which I don't want, right? So I'm leaving that part off. So let's take a closer look at the word benevolent, since that was in there twice. So benevolent, characterized by or expressing goodwill or kindly feelings. A benevolent attitude or her benevolent smile. We just looked at kind, and now we've got benevolent, so we're using kind to define benevolent and benevolent to define kind. Students in here, would your professors let you get away with this? I know I'd be like, excuse me, can't do that, right? Desiring to help others, so we've got help there again. Charitable, as in gifts from several benevolent alumni. And then number three, intended for benefits rather than profit. For example, a benevolent institution. I find it really interesting that they use institution here rather than a person, right? Why can't you be a benevolent person and not just a benevolent institution? So let's go with this. So here's how I'm looking at it. Acting in a way to help others for their benefit, not for the profit of oneself. So that's how I'm going to look at kind. So then let's look at revolution. Okay, the first one. An overthrow or repudiation and through replacement of an established government or political system by the people governed. Is Benjamin still here? No? He might have something to say about that one. That doesn't fit exactly what we're going to do. Not in this situation. Yet. Okay. Next one. A radical and pervasive change in society and the social structure, especially one made suddenly and often accompanied by violence. Gonna leave off the violence part because violence, kindness, those kind of don't seem, that's like oil and water, don't mix real well. But I like that it's a radical and pervasive change. So it's something that goes everywhere. It's not just with you. And the change is not in an individual, but it's in society and the social structure. So here's what I've got. A radical and pervasive change people make in order to change the social structure. Okay? So that's how I will look at revolution. And if we put those together, kindness as a revolutionary act, acting through radical and pervasive change in order to help others and make a change in the social structure for the benefit of others, not for the profit of oneself. So there's my thesis, right? That's how I am defining kindness as a revolutionary act, okay? And this leads me to my first argument, because we've got kindness, we've got revolution. The word that we're kind of missing is act. Kindness requires action. Action requires people. Not person, people. Okay? So, when you are messaging or tweeting or liking or texting someone, you can sometimes forget that there's a person behind all of that. So if you think about how we use technology, this is the Pew Research Center, and these were some surveys that they conducted from 2002 to 2018. That top line there is cell phone usage. Okay? So 95% of people in the United States own a cell phone. That other line is smartphone usage. We're at 77% now of people who own a smartphone, not just a cell phone, but a smartphone. So, okay, question here. Raise your hand if you have a cell phone within arm's reach. Raise your hand. Almost everybody. Okay, all right. So, and hey, I'm not here to judge, right? Because I would have my cell phone in my hand, except I've got somebody holding it for me. So cell phones are a really important aspect, but I want you to think about what it means when we do kindness through technology. So we might do donations through games. So we have here freerice.com. If you have ever heard of this, this is a game that you can play where you can go to freerice.com and you can take like quizzes, right? Like do SAT vocabulary words, or I've done a lot of Spanish vocabulary on here, right? And basically you click, and every time you get a right answer, you get 10 grains of rice that gets donated out, right? You get 5 right, 50 grains, and you keep playing, and it feeds hungry people. And nothing against this organization, right? I actually looked into the finances of the World Food Program, which is the organization that freerice.com, where it goes to, where the money goes to. And they do good things. But something's missing. Going back to my slideshow is missing. There we go. There. That's missing, right? Human connection is missing. And one thing that studies say over and over again is that technology is keeping us more and more from human connection. Now, we're able to interact with a lot more people because the internet is global. I have students who are playing games, and they are playing games with people in all kinds of countries simultaneously. So we're able to interact with people virtually, but we are missing a lot more of that human connection. There's a reason why many organizations, charitable organizations, adopt out kids, right, as part of their program. And they do that because of that human connection. And they know that that's something that draws people in. So I want you to think about when you're doing social media. Right? For those of you who have Instagram or Facebook, or I think I would mostly be talking to the younger people out here. And you think about the last post that you made. Have you ever gone to someone and said, "Hey, hey, did you like my Instagram post? Did you like my Facebook page?" Right? We aren't really looking for a particular person to like it, right? You're not going like, "Oh, so-and-so didn't like my Instagram post, they may not like me." What people are looking for is status, right? How many likes can I get? If you think about it, when Facebook reminds you at some point during the year and says, "This was your most liked photo of the year," right? It's a status thing. So it's not the connection, it's the status. So what I argue is that we need to do more action. And that action, I'm not saying don't do the technology, but think beyond the technology. So the first step is to make kindness a revolutionary action is to act, right? So instead of, or along with, donating rice on a computer game, why not go collect some food from, you know, people who live around you? They're called neighbors, right? Go collect food from some neighbors and donate to a local food pantry. Instead of, or along with, liking your friend's social media posts, why not write them a card? The paper kind, where when you write it in ink and you screw it up and you have to scribble the word out, right? Write one of those, or bake them some cookies. Do an action that actually does say, "Hey, I value you and care about you as a human being." Instead of, or along with, right, donating to a fundraising campaign on Facebook, go do a fundraiser for your favorite organization, right? Go take some things. I see this young woman here knitting, crocheting. Knitting, okay. See, you can tell I don't do it because I can't tell the difference, right? So she's knitting here, so maybe you take some of your knitting to a craft fair and sell it and donate the proceeds to your favorite organization. Again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't click and donate, but do both. Make it true action. So for Random Acts, how do we do that? Because we are a fully online organization. I'm the director of operations. I live in Wisconsin. My executive director lives in New York. My board president lives in Washington State. My director of finance lives in Texas. Right? So we are a fully online organization, but we really push people to act in their own communities. So one of the ways we do that is through our Sponsored Acts program. And here, you're able to write a small grant, and when I say small, I'm not kidding, it takes like 10 minutes, right? To write a small grant, and we will give you funds to go do an act of kindness if you can't afford to do it, right? Again, especially talking to the students here, this poor student. We will give you funds to go do that, okay? So we want you to get into your community and physically help and interact with people. That's a really important part of who we are. So that is our action. Ha, did it right the first time. Okay, so kindness requires action with people, right? Kindness also requires thought. You have to think. So, want you to imagine, right, this guy, he's coming through an office building, whatever. I want you to imagine that there was someone coming directly behind him. And you're him, okay? So you're walking through the door, there's somebody directly behind you, what do you do? How do you hold the door open? Walking through, and you hold it like this, right? Person's coming behind you. Absolutely. Okay? How many people here were born and raised somewhere in the Midwest? Raise your hand. Oh, yeah. All right. Then I got y'all. So my guess is that not only Would you do that when someone is coming behind you? My guess is half the time you do that in case someone's coming behind you. Like, you don't even check. You're like, oh, hold the door open just in case someone's right behind me, right? So that's a very Midwestern thing. We try to be very polite. But this is where I differentiate between being polite and being kind. Because if you're holding the door open like this and sometimes not even checking, how much thought goes into that? None. It's habit, right? It's habit, because your mama would yell at you if you were not polite, right? Hold that door open. But it doesn't really require thought. Kindness requires thought. So if you're looking at kindness, you are opening the door for somebody and letting them go through. This is how I differentiate between being nice and being kind, right? Being nice is a habit that doesn't require a lot of thought. It's just pretty much good manners. Probably if your mom yelled at you enough to get your elbows off the table, you're not going to put your elbows on the table. But you're also not going to think about not putting your elbows on the table. And by the way, why elbows? I don't, anyway. So being kind means that you have to critically think. You have to put forethought. You have to know someone's coming behind you. And you have to go, oh, someone's coming behind me. I'm going to be kind to them. Pull, open the door. Okay? Now, I'm not saying that if you don't do that, you are therefore not a kind person. You're evil. No, not at all. Right? It's just a really good metaphor to talk about the difference of kindness versus politeness. Right? Kindness requires thought. So, that way you have true connection. So if we're acting through radical and pervasive change in order to help others and make a change in the social structure for the benefit of others, not for the profit of ourselves, then there has to be thought. Okay? So let's take a look at this picture. What do you notice about this picture? There is a man standing, yes, probably if his mother was watching, she would yell at him and say, sit down, you're going to hurt somebody. What else? What else do you notice? What do you think this is? Sporting event, right? What are the colors? I get that from here. It's actually blue, but yeah, right? It's like the blue dress, purple dress. Right? What else? What other color? Gold, right? Yes. So this is not Michigan. This is actually the USG football club from Belgium. Okay. The other thing I noticed here is that almost everyone in this picture is white. In fact, on really close inspection, and I mean really close, I counted four people of color. Who may be people of color, right? They appeared to be people of color. There may be some lighter skinned people in there who are actually people of color, but probably not a lot, right? So there are four that I have noticed in here. And it's kind of like Where's Waldo, so I don't know, I might have missed one. But, and you might say, well, it's Belgium. You said it was the Belgium football club. Belgium has a lot of white people. Yes, they are nearly 90% Caucasian. But the point is not that there are a bunch of white people here. The point is the noticing. The point is noticing that right away. So when we are going to think critically to be kind, we have to notice. We have to think outside of who we are. We have to think outside of our own experiences, and that is really hard. So if you are a white person, it is unlikely that that thought even occurred to you. It's like, wow, there's all white people there. If you are a person of color, I will almost guarantee you that that was one of the first things you noticed. Because you are put in a position in your life every day if you live in this area where there are a whole bunch of white people. Right? You're put in that position every day. So, noticing, thinking critically. So noticing who is present and who isn't, and why is a group not there? Because if we're going to be kind, right, and we're talking about kindness for the benefit of others, not for the profit of oneself, we have to think outside of our own skin, right? Outside of your race, outside of your gender, outside of your sexual orientation, your age, your social class. It's noticing who the haves are and who the have-nots are and why. That's kindness as a revolutionary act. The first step in this part is noticing. So kindness requires action with people. It requires critical thought. It requires listening. That's the next thing. So listening, first thing, is different than hearing. Okay? Hearing is the biological aspect, right? If something literally doesn't work in here, then you have a hearing problem that is biological. Listening happens here. Listening does not happen here. Listening happens in your head. So, when we are acting through radical and pervasive change in order to help others and make a change in the social structure, for the benefit of others, not for the profit of oneself, we have to be able to listen to others. Truly listen to others and understand their experiences the best that we can. And I actually need to put a caveat here. When I say you have to live outside of your skin, what I am not saying is, hey, you should think like a black person, right? You, men, should think like a woman. That is not possible, right? Without making some very significant changes, it's not possible because I can sit here and try to think you into a man, and society is just not going to treat you that way, right? Unless you make some very different physical changes and difficult physical changes. So when I say think outside of your skin, what I really mean is to notice, to pay attention, to look around and see how others are experiencing it. You already know how you experience things. Look at how others are experiencing. Okay, so when we want that, donating, right? Listening to needs. Now, a lot of people will donate clothing, right? There's flooding somewhere, or there's, poverty somewhere. Oh, I want to donate my clothes. We have a lot of people who say, oh, I want to donate my clothes to a third world country. But what they don't do is listen to the people that they want to help. The people that they want to help will tell them one of two things. Number one, the charity will tell them that a vast majority of the time, they have to pay someone to take those clothes and put them in a dump because they just don't need them. Or they're nasty. You're like, oh, really? That's okay. No worries. So if you're not listening, then you might not know that. The other thing that donating clothing can do is that if it does get to that third world country, a lot of times
those clothes that are donated, people will wear them, but they'll put the local industries, the local storekeepers, and the local textiles out of business. So you really have to listen what is needed by the people that you want to help. What you don't want to be is what many people call the great white hope, right? You are going to go in there, you're going to go volunteer, and you're going to save all these poor little children, right? And that's how a lot of organizations will sell this kind of thing. Don't do that. Listen to the people who are on the ground. Listen to community leaders. So, for example, at Random Acts, we have built an orphanage in Haiti. We built that right after the big hurricane that went through, right, and the earthquakes. We also have built a high school in a very rural part of Nicaragua, and it's a high school that students can attend for free. Because in Nicaragua, if you are over the age of 18, or if you are pregnant, or if you have children, you're not allowed to go to school without paying money. And so at this particular high school, anyone can go for free. In fact, we just opened a couple of months ago, we opened a daycare at the school so that parents can bring their children, they can have a safe place to stay while they try to learn. But what we did that I think is really important is that we didn't go down and say, hey, y'all look like you need a high school. Let us build one for you. We went down and asked local community leaders, how can we help? What do you need, right? And they had started a high school already, but it was a high school that traveled and lived out of all these different kinds of buildings. And so the first thing we did was we bought them a bus to get the kids to a central place. And then we built the central place, right? So we were working off of what they already wanted. So that's really important to do. When you're changing the social structure, that means listening, right? Listening to each other, seeking to understand. And that can be difficult. That can be really difficult, especially if I think about, for example, politics, okay? Or, I don't know, religion. That we sit down and really attempt to understand other people. One important note here. Sitting down and listening to someone does not mean sitting down and trying to convince someone that you're right. That is not listening. Okay, listening is the ability to sit down and really try to understand where that person is coming from, which has nothing to do with agreement. You can sit down and listen and really work to understand this person because they are human, because you value them as a human being, and go, you know, this is so antithetical to what I believe. Explain. I really want to know where you're coming from. And the problem is, a lot of times when we do that, do we listen to understand? No, we listen to respond. We say, I know. When they say this, I'm going to say this. That's not listening, right? Listening is understanding what the other person's perspective is. Again, not agreeing with it necessarily, but listening to it. So, kindness requires action with people. Kindness requires critical thought. Kindness requires listening. Kindness also requires uncomfortability, right? And here's where people are like, oh, but my glittery unicorns. How many of you have been around glitter? Like, really been around glitter? Do we have any dance people here? Theater? Yeah. What is the thing we know about glitter? It goes everywhere and you never get rid of it. You never get rid of it. I remember when my daughter, when she was dancing and she was really young, right, when I was still giving her baths, and I'd be like, oh my goodness, that dance recital was a month ago and there's still glitter in your hair, right? So even with the glittery unicorn, it's pervasive. It goes everywhere. And if you work hard at it, glitter must work really hard. It sticks with you. Now, kindness requires uncomfortability, because sometimes it means that we have to call people out, right? Sometimes it means that we have to be face to face. So I'll give you an example. There's an app that is out there right now that is out there to help the homeless, and I won't talk about what this app is. And it does do good. I will say that. Again, I've looked into this. It really does do good. But basically the idea is that the people of this app give little beacons, right, little Bluetooth beacons to homeless people through a reputable shelter, right? They only work through really reputable organizations where they do a lot of screening. So they give these little beacons to homeless people, and then people who are going through the town can download the app, and they can look, and they can say, oh, look, there's this homeless guy who's like three blocks down the street, and they read his story, and they're like, oh, I want to help this person. So they click to donate some money to this person, okay? This can also be traded in for things like meals at particular restaurants, right? That kind of thing. And again, this app helps people. But where was this homeless person? Three blocks down the street. Kindness means sometimes facing the uncomfortability of looking at someone, looking at them in their face, in their eyes, and knowing that this person isn't in the position where they are because of merit anywhere any more than you are in a position because of merit. It's by an accident of birth or a health issue, or an economic issue that they had no control over. Sometimes that uncomfortability of staring at that person and looking at that person means you looking at yourself, knowing that you might be one or two missed paychecks away from this. And that's really uncomfortable. It means standing in the face of society and saying, no, I am not going to walk by this person or mindlessly drop a dollar in a cup. I'm going to interact. I'm going to make eye contact. I'm going to smile. I'm going to ask this person their story rather than read it on an app. So sometimes kindness means being uncomfortable. You also have to face your assumptions sometime. So this is actually my executive director, Rachel Miner, and she's an actress. But what a lot of people don't know about Rachel is that she has MS. And right now she is on a scooter, right? That's how she gets around. She can't walk reliably. So when she's on this scooter and she drives around town, not drives, she scoots around town, but a lot of times she'll have to catch a cab or something. And she's had a lot of people who will say to her, oh, I'm sure they're going to find a cure for you. You're so pretty. You'll be healed. Like, multiple times she's heard this. Now, I want you to think about the assumptions behind that. What does being beautiful have to do with being healed or deserving to be healed? And does that then necessarily mean that if somebody is ugly, that they don't deserve to be healed? The assumptions that we have to think about, things that we normally wouldn't. Now, I study intercultural communication. I've studied it for more than 20 years. This never occurred to me until she and I were talking about it about a month ago. And I was like, wow. So facing your assumptions, and that can be really uncomfortable. As I said before, sometimes calling people out can be really uncomfortable. And there are different ways to do it, right? I am not advocating the vitriol that's all over the internet. Don't do that. Don't do that. But if someone makes a racist, sexist, homophobic joke, you can't write it off to say, oh, well, you know, I know this person. They didn't mean it that way. That still perpetuates. And it ends up being a kindness to call them out. Is that going to feel uncomfortable? Oh, yeah. It's going to feel very uncomfortable. It'll feel very uncomfortable. But again, we are looking to do this for the benefit of others, not for the profit of oneself. So as I'm thinking about this, why am I staying silent? Am I staying silent for the benefit of others? No, I'm staying silent so I don't have to be uncomfortable. So it means being uncomfortable. It means that kindness requires continuous work. You don't get to take a day off. Don't get to take a day off. In some way, shape, or form, every single person in this room is privileged. If you are a student here, or if you have a degree, only 1% of the world gets a bachelor's degree. You're privileged. So you need to think outside of your own skin, which is a metaphor for experience, not actual skin, right? Think outside of that. And it's hard, and it requires continuous work. But acting through radical and pervasive change in order to help others and make a change in the social structure for the benefit of others, not for the profit of oneself. If you're thinking, I'm so overwhelmed, I'm afraid to mess up, you're going to mess up. Everybody does. And that's okay. I mean, think about it. When you were a baby and you first started to take some steps and you fell down on your butt, which I'm quite certain everyone in here did at some point. Just think if you were like, oh, well, this is not going to work. I'm not trying that again. You'd all be scooting around on your diapers still. You're going to mess up. It's okay. Own it. When you mess up, own it. Because that's what a true good mess up is when you own it and learn from it. So you've probably gone much of your life not having to see any of this. You need to learn to recognize. You need to learn to understand. You need to learn to listen. We all do. So, step two, listen to understand. Think critically about your actions. When you want to do a kindness, stop for a moment and think. Are you being polite or are you being kind? Are you being kind for this person or are you doing something kind that you think will help them but you haven't checked? Interact with people in order to clarify what's important to them. How can you help? act with integrity. Integrity does not mean that you don't screw up. But it does mean that you own it when you do and you learn from it. Be open and humble to correction when you screw up. Step 3 is leading. Again, listen to understand. Correct others with firm kindness, not vitriol. Be led by those that you wish to help. And be a true ally. Fighting privilege is your responsibility. Kindness is a revolutionary act. Acting through radical and pervasive change in order to help others and make a change in the social structure for the benefit of others, not for the profit of oneself. So don't spend time thinking about what you want to do. Spend time thinking about who you want to be. And remember, kindness is not who you are. It's what you do. It's the action you take. So I encourage you to act in a revolutionary way and get kind. Thank you. Yeah, does anyone have any questions? That was either really good or really bad. Oh, yes. Okay. Go. Wait for the mic.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
In terms of your organization and requesting grants and so forth for projects, is this predominantly focused on kindness towards fellow humans, or is it more multi-species?
We are multi-species. Yes, we look at kindness very broadly. So yeah, definitely not just humans. So we've had lots of people do kindness acts for animal shelters. In fact, we have a student organization, a Random Acts student organization at our university. And on Tuesday, they're putting together the felt pillows for dogs for a dog shelter. So, yep. Other questions? Yes.
So in the talk, you didn't mention a word like sociology. Did you make that decision?
Did I make the decision not to mention sociology?
Yeah.
Not specifically that word. I think if I were doing this more as a classroom lecture, I would have pulled that in. But I kind of saw this as more of a general talk. Because when you pull in sociology and you pull in culture, right, I touched on it a little bit. I probably would have gone a lot deeper into it if it was a classroom lecture. But in these kind of talks, I tend to skirt the surface. So not specifically that word.
I noticed that you talked about listening in order to understand without a goal of response, but then you also emphasized kindly correcting or kindly pointing out people's prejudices and whatnot. How do you reconcile those?
Because you have to listen to understand first, right? There, you never want to listen only to respond. Right, I would want to listen and hear the why. I'll give you a great story. So I was doing research in this bar where they had Latino night, right? And it was me and like 5 other white people and everybody else, like 150 Latinos. And I went up to this guy and I was talking to him. And we were talking about John Leguizamo at that point had a TV show called House of Buggin', and it was very Latino-centered. And I said, oh, well, you'll understand this because you're Mexican. And he's like, hold up. I'm Puerto Rican and Nicaraguan. You can't assume because someone has brown skin that they're Mexican. right? And he did it very kindly, but I was like, oh man, I really screwed up. So he listened to what I had to say, and he corrected me kindly, and then went further into the conversation, right? He didn't go all off on me. And I did end up marrying him, so, you know. After I said, that just shows you, right? You screw up, you own it, then things can work out. It's okay. But it is important to listen to understand and to have that correction. So, you know, I have a relative where we were driving in D.C. and we went past a corner. Every corner has a bus stop in D.C. We went past a corner. It was mostly white people. Went past another corner, mostly white people. Went past another corner, mostly black people. She locks the doors. And I'm like, so why did you choose to lock the door? Well, this is a dangerous area. What clued you into that? Right? So it was, I really wanted to listen to her, and she actually came to that realization, which is way better. But I think it's important, instead of just going, okay, she didn't mean it, I want to make this uncomfortable, right? Really listening to, why did you do that? And prodding and making sure. Yeah. Oh, one more.
That very much puts me in mind of something called street epistemology, mm-hmm. which is where you solicit from people not only what a particular core belief or disposition is, but you also get them to explain it, and you ask kind but thought-provoking questions mm-hmm. about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we've got time for one more. No? Yes?
Hi there. Thank you. Excellent talk.
Thank you.
I was wondering if would you be able to associate what you were speaking with the term interpretation at all? Not in the sense of foreign language interpretation,
yeah.
but in the sense of
interpersonal interpretation.
Yeah, interpersonal, forming emotional and intellectual connections with other people.
Absolutely. I mean, there are so many ties to interpersonal here, making those connections, but also that ability to kind of step outside yourself and I would call it in class seeing things as a stranger, right? One of the things I do in class is I come in late on the first day of class. And like just a couple minutes. If I go too long, though, I'll leave. But I'll come in a couple minutes late, and I'll say, why are you all sitting down? And they look at me all confused, like, what do you mean? I said, well, who told you to sit down? And they're like, nobody. Are we supposed to stand up? Right? It's really fun to make them uncomfortable. But I do that to kind of get them to understand these things that they are doing that are so normalized that they don't even see it. Right? So, yeah, excellent. Absolutely interpersonal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all we have time for. If we could give Jennifer a round of applause.
Thank you.